southern man, a western town.
I read once musicians don't retire. They stop when there's no more music in them. Well, I still have music in me. Absolutely positive about that.
Of Southern Man, Western Town, the podcast you are listening to now, and my name is Jeff Lawrence, also known as AKA J.S. Lawrence. Today on the show, I have got an interview with Lawrence Gomez. Very good guy, very good interview, very good talk. excuse me. What's going on here? That is not COVID. That is what you call a morning coffee cough. Morning coffee cough, an MCC, if you will. Anyway, Lawrence Gomez calls in from Buffalo, New York. He is the founder of Hell Ever After, also their guitarist and one of the vocalists, which is, of course, a band from Buffalo, New York, who is also putting together a rock opera. We talk about that. I guess it would be more of a metal opera, if you, maybe. I don't know. They're kind of a prog metal band. I really like it. I play one of the songs on the show today, The Parade, which you will hear following this intro. Really cool. Kind of intricate stuff. Really good sounding guitars and really a great arrangement. You know, it's not your average. It's not your just verse, chorus, solo, verse, chorus kind of song. Very cool. I think he said they're a seven-piece band now. Check out their music. Just look up Hell Ever After on... I listened to the two songs on Spotify mainly because I just kind of started digging them. And just kind of listening to them over and over. But they got other stuff. And we talk all kinds of stuff. We talk, he was even a pro wrestler once, which I didn't know when I first asked him to be on the show, which ties in good, because as you know, most of my listeners, that I used to be in the wrestling business, and we talk about wrestling on the show. I've had a few pro wrestlers on the show. Probably will have a couple of more coming up in the near future, hopefully. We talk about that. It's a little bit different. What he kind of went full-fledged into wrestling and then kind of went into music after. My story is a little different, which one day I'll interview myself, I'll just tell my story. But I was, as far as wrestling goes, I was just always what they call a jobber, a guy that just went in and lost on purpose. I just did it on the weekends when I didn't have any music gigs. Music's always been the thing. Excuse me again. More of those MCCs coming up. Anyway, we had a great interview. It was a good interview. He kind of felt bad because he thought he talked too much on the interview, but I like it that way. I don't think he talked too much. I like the more information, the better on these kind of things. Get your word out there and what you're trying to present. The worst interviews I've had are the ones where I've got to drag it out of people, like where I say, when's your next gig? Friday. What guitar do you play? Gibson. That kind of thing, where it's just a one answer, and they sit there, and I got to kind of drag a conversation out of them. It's only been a couple like that. Most of the interviews are good, but this one was real good. So yeah, check out Hell Ever After. The rock opera's not out yet. It's kind of in the, I wouldn't say it's in the beginning stages as far as writing goes, but as far as, he talks about it, but it's not out yet, but it will be. And when it is, he'll come back on the show, we'll talk again. But the music's out with the band Hell Ever After. And you can also watch his wrestling stuff from when he used to be a pro wrestler. You can find that on YouTube. I believe he said it was Salvatore Morocco. I know it's Morocco. I hope I got the first name right. But he talks about it in the interview, so you'll get it one way or the other. And I'm gonna try to. I might search up and see if I can find one of his promos on here and play it. Anyway, that's about it. So gonna play you out here and. Coming up next, my interview with Lawrence Gomez. Stick around.
Time. My name is Salvatore Morocco, and I have the pleasure of coordinating all the efforts of the Spades of Vegas. Now tonight, I am sending Robbie Vegas out there with Pav City and Will the Thrill to show what they can do and let Robbie Vegas establish what kind of mastermind he truly is. Now, as I've been saying this whole time, we are going to dominate, and right now, you are going to witness.
The parade. This is Hell Ever After. I will show you what it means to be completely free.
We'll be right back.
All right, joining me right now from Hell Ever After, Lawrence Gomez. How are you?
I'm doing swell. How about yourself?
Good, man. You're calling me from upstate New York, it is?
Yep. Buffalo, New York, home of the Bills.
Yep.
And for anybody unfamiliar with New York, we are much closer to Niagara Falls than we are New York City. We're about 45 minutes south of Niagara Falls, and we are 8 hours west of New York City. So that'll give you a good idea of where I am located.
Yeah, very. Yeah, my stepfather, he's passed away now, but he was from Syracuse, so kind of near.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
kind of near.
That's
there.
Right in between us and New York.
So we got all kinds of stuff to talk about. We got the band, of course, and then the pro wrestling even.
Absolutely. I'm pretty excited about it. It's pretty fortuitous.
I didn't know about that part of it. That ties in pretty nicely, though.
Absolutely. It's gonna be like it was kind of meant for this to happen.
Yeah. And also, when I first was coming across you guys, it was, you said something about the rock opera thing kind of caught my eye. And I didn't kind of get it. I didn't know if that was called Hell Ever After 2 or what was that all about?
Yep. So basically, because it's in its early stages,
yep.
Right now we're treating it as a band.
Okay.
So basically, as I'm writing the material and the story and developing the ideas for the rock opera live show, the band, hopefully soon, will be playing shows and just treating the whole thing as a band. And then when we record the record, then we will start taking the steps that are necessary to develop it for the stage.
Oh, okay.
And then it will become the greater rock opera portion.
Oh, that's very cool. Will it have the same name, or are you just going to...
Yep. So basically the band and the project are synonymous.
Okay, that's very cool then. Yeah, and you have a couple of songs on Spotify, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I was listening to him. I was just making sure. I was hoping it was. I was making sure it was you, but then I kind of figured out that it was. I made that mistake one time on a podcast. I was listening to music with the same band name. It was on the podcast, but it wasn't them.
But I
didn't see any other band names that were you. But
oh, you poor guy.
Yeah. But yeah, yours I only saw the one, so that's good. But
I definitely already went through all the legalization, and since it's such an interesting, spot on name, I nailed it down. I own the name, and then there's nothing else out there that's similar or close at all. So I'm pretty pumped about that.
Yeah, the other band that had on air was called Vampire, so there was like 700 of them. So it was a crapshoot to figure out which one I was interviewing.
Oh that sounds like there will be a new Vampire band every other day.
Now the music itself, I mean, it's kind of prog metal, I guess. Right? Is that the genre you would say you're in, or maybe?
Yeah, it definitely can fall into a lot of different kind of categories. There's like a gray area with my writing, but it's like a prog metal, and I tend to be a very thrash metal writer, but I approach it with a little bit of pop sensibility, and I do also have a lot of other influences. Like, I'm a big classical music guy.
Yeah, I can hear that.
I also love musicals. One of my favorite things is West Side Story, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So I kind of bring all of these different influences that I have together, and I'm making a really intricate, diverse music product that I would, as a listener, want to hear. And it's really, really cool how it's just kind of very effortlessly, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of tediousness to the project, but it almost seems like on a grand scale, it's very effortlessly coming together, and very organically. And I'm pretty excited about where it's headed.
Yeah, because I could almost hear like a
kind of like a Slayer thing, but it was more, yeah, I could hear the classical thing in there that Slayer don't have, like, the more, it was a more intricate kind of guitar playing than what they do.
So it's kind of a funny story, because my first favorite and all-time favorite metal band ends up being Metallica, and I know that's really kind of cheesy cliche to say, but they really just did it for me right from the beginning.
Yeah, me too.
Getting into music. But then, as a guitarist, I ended up kind of catering over towards the Slayer role more. I like it a little more gritty and a darker and evil sounding. So that I think my guitar playing ends up coming off more Slayer, even though Metallica would be kind of number one for me.
It actually had a better sound to me. I mean, for my personal taste, well, the way your guitar actually sounds on the recording. So, you know, there's sometimes sounds, I don't know, I guess they do it on purpose that way. It's kind of out there, but I don't know what I'm trying to say. Yours is like a little more cleaner. You can like hear every note.
Absolutely. I understand exactly what you're saying. I want everything to be heard. So, because it's a musical, I want it to be kind of appealing to a broad audience, but at the same time, I'm not going to sacrifice the tune to appeal. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to make the song whatever in my mind I feel the song deserves. So I'm not going to like throw in a cheesy hooky chorus or some clean ballady parts if it's not necessary.
Right.
And my guitar sound, I'm actually still playing with it, actually. I'm always trying, and actually, funny story, the other guitarist in our band is so much more talented as a guitarist than me, but I feel like I bring the very unique writing style. So we really complement each other really well. And he is a gearhead as well. So we're both together always bouncing ideas off of each other and trying to really dial in our sound to where it has a heavy crunch to it, but isn't too overbearing for a listener, like your average listener to enjoy.
And then do you do most of the writing, or do you guys kind of write together?
To this point, I have 8 songs written, and to this point, I have done 100% of the writing. But I am hoping, as we just added our 7th member of the band to cover like a lead vocal, because I do all the male vocals on the demo, and then we have a very talented, classically trained female vocalist by the name of Gina doing those parts on the demo. But I really felt that the songs were lacking because my voice isn't as strong. In fact, I picked the songs, the Parade and Bishop's Song, for this demo because they were 2 songs that I felt comfortable doing vocally.
Yeah.
But we were the entire time searching for a stronger male vocalist to take the leads. So with that being said, we just kind of rounded out the band now. So there's 7 members, and I'm really hoping that this next generation of material that we come out with for the project can have more influences from the rest of the group, because at the end of the day, I really, really like the idea that I am writing this really cool, also catchy rock opera, but I'm also struggling with the fact that it can only be better with outside influences.
Right, right.
I'm really hoping that I can bring a bulk of the music and then everybody can put their stamp on it. In fact, that has already happened a little bit. Khalil and Erickson at the end of the Parade have a really cool back and forth lead section, which they contributed that. It was just my idea to put it there, and then they dropped the rest.
Yeah, I heard that.
So we have a little bit of contributions, and I'm hoping that can only grow.
Oh yeah, that's cool that it works that way. Are you planning on going down to, you know, I know you're a good ways from New York City, from Buffalo, but is that kind of where you're gonna try to start this thing at, or?
So my end goal, I'm a Buffalo guy. I'm a little older. I know you. So on a side note, I listened to your podcast with RMS, and that band was sick.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I really enjoyed that one. So any listeners to hear, if you're enjoying our show today, I know it's early. I would recommend checking out the Tom Matthews RMS podcast. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed those guys. I'd like to get his information and be in touch with him.
Yeah, I can get that. I can definitely get that for you. He's down in Atlanta, Georgia, but they travel, you know. He's
awesome, awesome. Getting back to what you said, so I'm 38 years old now, and this project is kind of what I always dreamed of doing, and I'm finally in a place financially and with my career and with family and whatnot that I can really contribute what is necessary to pulling it off. But with that being said, I don't think that, like, touring or even, like, U.S. tour, let alone world tours, I really don't think those are in the books or in the cards, rather. But going down to New York City, I definitely see can be a big draw, especially with our product. I think at the end of the day, once people start hearing it,
yeah,
it can it really gain some steam. And I don't think my goal isn't to do the full production in New York City, but definitely the band. I want the band to go everywhere. I feel like as far as like the full musical, unless, of course, there were people out there with the financial backing that wanted the entire thing and could compensate us according. I'll do whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it's worth it, I'll take this thing to the moon.
Yeah, and you know, but, I'll make it. Go ahead.
But I could foresee the band really like going down regularly to play New York City. But getting back to what I was saying, for my ultimate goal for the opera as a musical stage show is to make it a Buffalo staple. I want it to be in the discussion, not only amongst plays and operas, but I want it to be the quintessential rock opera. I want to be like, whenever rock opera comes up, people be like, a rock opera? Oh, like Hell Ever After? Like, I want it to be, yeah, in that discussion.
Yeah,
and then I also want people to say or think like, oh yeah, we're going to go into the city this weekend. We're going to stay in Buffalo for a couple days and we're going to catch the Bills game, the Sabres game, and the rock opera. You know,
yeah,
that's
cool.
Kind of where I want this to go. It's a very ambitious thought process, or at least mind where my mind is at. I have super high goals with it, but I think that is not too far-fetched, especially considering the material and how good it's turning out. And we're just getting started.
Yeah, and it really hasn't been done as far as I know, that, like, that genre and style and stuff. It's, you know, most rock operas are just your straight up, just kind of rock and roll stuff, you know?
Yeah, we're pushing it a little bit, and I think that aggressiveness and our mentality and how all the members are in, yeah, like, we are ready to go. And I think that's all going to bring just that much more to the table to where it can be successful. And also because I don't think anybody's ever tried.
Yeah, I don't think they have either. And the reason why I bring up New York City is because this may help you out, actually. And I may have to shoot you over this guy's info, but there's a guy, he was actually on the podcast. You can go back, I don't know, it's maybe 25 episodes ago by now, but his name's Brian Barentine, and he runs a children's musical thing that he does weekly called Funiki Jam. But the reason why he could probably help you is he's in Manhattan because he has a theater. Like, he has the theater's, I don't know how he has it. I guess it's leased out or something, because his his children's music thing goes to China somehow. I don't know, but he does it in Manhattan. But he's got the whole theater there, and I don't think they use it, like, every day. So he might be somebody that could at least get the theater there to rehearse in or something. I don't know. Maybe you check it out. His name's a couple of episodes a while back. His name's Brian Barentine. I grew up with him in Georgia, so I know him really well, but he lives in Manhattan. And
That would be too cool. Like, that sounds like totally a direction we could go in.
Yeah, and yeah, just you can go back on and listen to that episode, but I'll shoot you his info too. And also, my main sponsor on the show is Black Doomba Records. And they're looking to sign guys like you as far as the, so I don't know, that might be a way to, Tommy Stewart from the old band Hallows Eve back in the 80s runs that, and he might be somebody you need to talk to too. He may be interested in putting the whole thing on vinyl or whatever, you know.
That's, so when I was speaking about ambitious goals, I have short-term and long-term ambitious goals. And obviously I said the long-term ambitious goal is to have it be a Buffalo staple. And even if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere.
Right.
So obviously when I say Buffalo staple, New York's in the same discussion.
Right, right.
So that's the ultimate goal, is to have our product be a desired show to attend, whether it be in Buffalo or New York City or wherever, if God, the sky's the limit. But my short-term realistic goal is to record the full record and have it on vinyl. That would be, I'm a huge record collector, and I got late to the game. In fact, I do that all the time. I really just sit on stuff. I just sit on it. And then I'm like, oh, you know what? Today I'll listen to this, or today I'll check this out, or you know what? I'll try this medium.
Yeah.
And finally, it was only not this past Christmas, but the Christmas prior, because my brother's collected, my younger brother, by 3 years, and he's in the band as well. He plays bass. He's super talented as well. He's collected vinyls for 15 years. And then I just was like, oh, you know what? Let's put some vinyl on. Let's really give this a go. Let's give this an honest try, because it died out. I was growing up in the 90s. I was born in 83.
Yep.
So I was growing up in the 90s, and really, vinyl was dead. It was so dead. And then, like, I kind of grew up with CDs, and that was such an easy medium to use. But finally, I was like, let's do this. So I gave it a listen, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, what have I been doing with my life?
Yeah.
This is so superior. And just the fact of, like, sitting down with a complete record, because I feel like so many records are meant to be played front to back. And I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan. And you can't just listen to a Floyd song. You got to listen to that old record.
Yeah, that's how yours will be too. It'll kind of connect like that.
That's a huge, well, thank you. And that's a huge goal for us, is to have it be, the music will also tell its own story on top of the singing and the actual dialogue.
Do you have any do you have anything with the female vocalist on it right now already out?
Yeah, she sings at the end of the parade.
Oh, okay.
That's the 7-minute track.
Yeah, I was listening to that right when you called. I was trying to get all the way through it before you called. I've been listening to the song, the other song, a lot.
So the bass kicks in, the song kind of drops out, and the bass kicks in, and then it just kind of builds back up to this crazy crescendo ending. Maybe not a crescendo ending, but it's still pretty epic ending. And the whole middle portion of that is all of our singer. Her name is Gina Lunetta, and I got so lucky. She was a friend of a friend, or my girlfriend actually runs the roller derby in Buffalo, New York. She founded it. So she has so many contacts as well. So I came out of the pro wrestling and heavy metal communities, and then she obviously built and established the roller derby community. So between the two of us, we have so many connections here in the city and she had a junior skater. So the juniors are the under 18 league. And she was she would sing all the anthems. So just she's like, well, yeah, I know you're looking for this part to be filled, the specific part to be filled. I think I know somebody. So she came in one day, learned my parts, and nailed it. and then I was just like, oh, how did this happen? It's just like, I feel like each member has kind of done that, because I mentioned that the other guitarist in our band is just so, he's got a doctorate in music. He's like super ridiculously skilled. They actually, everybody overshadows me, and I'm writing all the material. So I just always like come back to that. Like, if all these incredibly talented musicians are on board for my silly little music project, I'm onto something. We're going in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, you can't have anything without the song.
So then she stayed on board, and then I just feel like it snowballed. And then now I'm surrounded by incredibly talented musicians, and the sky's the limit. Like, I can write anything, literally anything that my mind can come up with. And these individuals that I'm working with in this band can deliver it. And it's sounding amazing.
The reason why I ask about her is Black Doomba Records. They're looking for, he's looking to sign some more bands right now, but he's specifically looking for something with a female vocal in it. Doesn't have to be all, but like I said, like in it.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. I mentioned that we recorded these two songs. Well, it's a four track, but the other two songs are more like interludes. So we recorded these two songs, Bishop's Song and The Parade, because I mentioned that, They're what the two songs I felt most comfortable doing, because I don't have the strongest strongest vocal abilities. So there's actually four other songs that were in the running, and my brother actually said, "You realize we went into the studio and we didn't even record our strongest songs?" And I'm like, "I know, but I couldn't handle the vocals on the other tracks." So that just goes to tell you, any listeners out there, if you like the demo, well, we're calling it an EP because we're trying to like really push it as an official piece of music. If you enjoy the EP, wait till you see what we got coming, because it just gets so much stronger and better. I'm really pumped.
Yeah, I think most of my listeners will be into it. I'm going to play one of the songs on the show today, but you know, I have all kinds of people on the show, but my doom metal episodes tend to be the highest ones, tend the most listened to. So
cool.
Right up there, and I'm in, like, this podcast goes out to 8 or 9 different countries. Well, it goes out to more than that, but that tends to be what listens to it, about 8 or 9 different countries. Basically, all your English-speaking countries, I have listeners.
Very, very cool. Hello, listeners.
Before we move on and talk about wrestling for a second, I wanted to, what's your main guitar? I got a lot of guitar nerds, and they dig the gear stuff.
I really should be much more talented for as long as I've been playing, but I did that pro wrestling thing, and I really like wanted to succeed in that. So I fully submersed myself into that, like my body and learning owning my skill was like, it was paramount.
Yeah.
So music really took a back step. In fact, if I didn't have two tribute bands, which I was asked to join, I didn't even have the time to start a tribute band. I was in a Misfits tribute and I was in a Danzig tribute. It's funny because there were two different people that asked, and it just so happened to be Misfits and Danzig, and those are related.
Yeah.
So I played guitar in the Danzig one, and I played bass in the Misfits tribute.
Yeah,
and those were so much fun.
I saw a picture of that one.
If it weren't for those two projects, I wouldn't have done music at all. Like so my last band in 2009 that I kind of was fed up with doing bands, it had three songs that I was super happy, like I was crazy about. These were really good tracks, and for them to just die because the band broke up, I was heartbroken. So I kind of sat with those three songs knowing I wanted to do something with them. And then those three songs kind of ended up catapulting the Hell Ever After project. But so getting back to my guitar, my apologies, I can ramble.
That's
right. I know, I'm sorry.
This is a good show to do it on.
Getting back to my guitar playing, I don't have, I'm not diehard with anything. I'm getting into Fortin, and I know that's amps and pedals.
Yeah.
I play an ESP LTD.
Okay. Yeah, I love those.
It's been my bread and butter, and I would say that's my go-to guitar. But I'm not so crazy about it to where I would say, this is it. I'm only going to play ESPs. Because yeah. I also have an Ibanez that I really like. And I have this DBZ Flying V, which DBZ was a off company from Dean.
Yep.
The guy from Dean.
Yep.
The guy from Dean kind of parted ways, and then one of them started the DBZ. So I got this sick V, and it looks gnarly. And I put the Dimebag pickups in it because I thought that would make me sound better as a player. And it really doesn't fit me. I use it sparingly. It's really great because it's got the Floyd Rose and I could really wail on it. So I use it for the song where I do have a lead solo in. I really leave that to my other guitarist. His name's Khalil Siriki, because nothing I could do will ever outshine his abilities. So I really like, I lean on him for wherever any lead guitar parts go. But there is a song in particular that I really enjoy shredding on. So I do that, and that's where I use this V with the Floyd Rose.
Yeah, that's a good visual guitar.
Yeah, I don't have any guitars where it's like, that's it for me. I'm hoping that I can get there. And even my amps, I'm not... I use a Crate Blue Voodoo, but I feel like it only has an amazing clean tone.
Right.
I'm not crazy with the distortion tone. In fact, I supplement it right now with a distortion pedal, but I want to get away from that. I want to find an amp that really has a really strong distortion tone.
May have to get a Mesa Boogie or something, maybe.
I know. I'm definitely thinking triple rectifier. But I think I'm going to check out the EVH 5150 only because there's this band called Gojira.
Yeah.
And that's what they use. And if I was going to pick a tone that I wanted to mirror, it would probably be Gojira, even though I was telling you Metallica is my favorite, and I love a plethora of bands, Pantera, Machine Head, Megadeth.
Yeah.
Like I said, Pink Floyd.
Now you bring the EVH. There's a guy on that's been on the show too, named Rob Von Poly. He's kind of like a Zach Wild kind of guy down in Georgia, and he swears by those EVH. So yeah, maybe the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's gonna be the next thing I try. I think I'm gonna grab an 5150. In fact, I'm currently actively in the process of acquiring one, and I think based off of how many people use them and how everybody's quality of guitar tone comes out of that, I think I'm going to be pleasantly surprised and very pleased with it.
Very cool.
So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm not an adamant, like it has to be, like I'm not a diehard guy. Like I'm not super tied to anything yet.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I want to be.
Yeah. I just recently have been. I'm 53 years old. I've always been that way too. I never really cared. And then I got a Gibson 335 about 4 months ago. Now I won't touch anything else that I have. So,
oh yeah. those slash throat leads. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. So I'm like a smooth jazz guy. So it's perfect for me.
Gnarly.
But what I was going to, let's get into the pro wrestling a little bit. Now you're kind of different than me. Cause I was also in pro wrestling, but I was always music first, And then I grew up in Georgia real close to WCW studios and stuff. So I got a job there pretty easy. And I, but I was different. I was, I did it for, like, I was a jobber. And most of my audience knows what that is. But I was basically a jobber on purpose. Like, when I didn't have a gig on a Saturday night, I would just go do a match somewhere and lose for $50, $100
And then,
nice. So I never really, really tried to be anywhere with it. But it
I did
like,
my share of jobs. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, I never was. I never wanted to do anything more than that. Just be a local jobber because I was always the music thing. But sounds like you kind of went hardcore into it. So tell us about it.
So, like I mentioned in '09, my last band broke up, but I still had like a bug. I'm like, I am at the end of the day a performer.
Right.
Guitar tends to be my outlet, but that doesn't mean that I can't do anything that is needed. So I had this bug for performing, and like, I'm like, all right, I really don't want to start another band. I'm not really strong enough vocally to do the whole singer-songwriter route. So what am I going to do? What else do I really like? Well, I mean, I've always really enjoyed pro wrestling. I mean, I grew up on that, and I feel like rock, well, it was rock when I was like 6 and 7, but,
right.
And it ended up transitioning into metal, but like, I feel like at 6 and 7, I was already into rock and pro wrestling, so I feel like really early on, I knew kind of what I wanted to do with my life, but, so I needed an outlet, so I wasn't going to start another band, because I was kind of burnt out from the whole band thing, and, like, I couldn't do the singer-songwriter thing I mentioned. So, but I started attending the local pro wrestling, and I was like, I didn't even know we did this. I didn't even know we had local pro wrestling. What's local pro wrestling? I thought it was some bad guys in the backyard,
yeah.
Like, on a trampoline. But I ended up going, and I'm like, hey, this isn't half bad. And then in one of the guys I went to high school with was in the ring, and I'm like, oh, what the heck? Where did this come from? I was like, my mind was blown. I'm like, and then I started discovering what the indies were. And like, growing up in pro wrestling, you kind of heard rumblings of the indies, and you're like, oh, Randy Orton, he came from the indies. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, whatever. So I kind of just like submersed myself, and I'm like, hey, you know, this might be it. This, I can make a go of this. So I got in touch with the right people, and there was a school opening up, and I started training, and it's Blackjack Phoenix, so he's a Western New York guy. It was his school, and I trained for like a year, hardcore for a year, and then I had my first match, and this is going back to about 2012. And I was already 29, so I mean, I had already basically established myself. Like, I had already owned my house. I'd already, so I have a daughter. Her name's Hannah. She's going to be 16 now. God, I'm old. so I was already 29 having my first match. It was like, almost like a midlife crisis type stuff. So I started off as a Mexican wrestler, masked wrestler by the name of Tango Torres, cause I'm Hispanic. And I'm kind of have a bubbly personality, I guess you could say. So, but I wasn't really feeling it. I had always catered to the heels. And some people do that. A lot of people like to hate the heels, but I feel like I always went against the grains.
Right.
We just watched the Turtles movie for my friend's birthday. And my favorite is, Leonardo's my favorite turtle. And everybody always loved Michelangelo. So I feel like, and then we joked about, growing up, I love comic books, and my favorite comic was the X-Men, and my favorite X-Men was Cyclops, and everybody always loved Wolverine. So I kind of always went against the grain, and my little brother was a huge Bret the Hitman Hart fan. And I, of course, had to be Mr. Perfect's fan.
Yeah.
So I started off as a Mr. Perfect fan, but my all-time favorite pro wrestler is Ravishing Rick Rude. Especially his WCW career. So with that being said, I really wasn't feeling the whole Tango Torres mass wrestler thing. It's fun. You like being the bad guy. You like being cheered on, but you can do so much more cool stuff as the heel.
Right.
I finally finally established that I could do it, that I could pro wrestle, and then I got somebody let me be the heel. So I'm like, all right, so this is it. I really got to put it all out there right now because I might not get another chance to show people what I could do as the bad guy. So I went out there and I jobbed, but I also got to get my heel moment, my heel spots in. So that being said, it worked out. And I went on to do this Salvatore Morocco character. And it started off as like a sleazy Vegas guy.
Right.
But then it kind of transitioned through all the different things that that whole kind of dirty, gritty Vegas theme has to offer. And I ended up doing, when I won my only heavyweight championship, I was doing a big fight gimmick. So so for those that don't know, a gimmick is like kind of like your character, story for your character. So I was doing a big fight gimmick, and it was very, still very like Las Vegas boxing, over the top. Michael Schaefer, let's get ready to rumble. In fact, I brought in some of my friends that were kind of in the wrestling scene, but not really. My idea eventually was to use trainees as like my entourage. And I also had like a Mickey character. He was my coach. And then I also had a ring girl. So she would just carry around a sign, a Salvatore Morocco sign for me. And I also brought my own ring announcer. So I like, much like Hell Ever After, anything I'm going to do, if somebody's going to let me do it, I'm going to do it way over the top. It's going to be all or nothing, super big, colorful. You're not going to forget me. So that's what I was doing when I won. Towards the end of my wrestling run, I won my own first and only heavyweight championship, and I was very proud of that moment. And I had a great wrestling experience. Yes, pro wrestling is very difficult.
Yeah, and the older you get, the more painful it gets.
Yeah, it's very physical. It's very mentally taxing. The people that make it really paid their dues.
Yeah.
If you're at the top of pro wrestling, you went through the ringer, trust me. So I feel like I experienced all the good and all the bad that can come with pro wrestling. And I really am still happy with my experience. And it ended up being a combination of concussions and balancing all my responsibilities that kind of pushed me out of pro wrestling. I was just like, all right, I've got a heavyweight championship and it's really good. I feel like I could take the next step. Can I sacrifice the things that I need to in order to make that transition? And am I, and I'm already 35, am I going to be as hungry as the next younger kid? Am I just going to be taking a spot to try to make it?
Yeah.
And I have this really cool music idea that I feel will be also very rewarding. So I'm not going to regret hanging up my boots. So that ended up being what happened. I picked hanging up my boots because of how demanding being a pro wrestler was on my personal life and on my person, on my actual, like, my body cracks all over now.
Yeah.
So that was the story there. I wrestled for 6 full years. I had somewhere between 200 and 300 professional wrestling matches. I won a number of tag titles, a number of single titles. Like I was saying, that one heavyweight championship, which is near and dear to me. I wouldn't say I made a lot of friends.
It's hard in that business.
But I do have two people that are in my life now from pro wrestling that I'm very happy with, or happy to have that relationship. And I can always go back, and because I had a really good experience, I can always go back, and I feel like I'm going to end up utilizing people from that wrestling background in my project, because it's going to be I'm going to have some physical moments in my opera that can benefit from having those trained individuals.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I had my last match at 45, and a guy stepped on my spine, and something just didn't feel right. I was like, I'm done. This is it. My last match.
Yeah. So I ended up, I don't like sharing too much, but I ended up taking a chair shot from Brian Knobs of the Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
And it wasn't planned, but I have no hard feelings because it just made sense for where we were at. It wasn't a match. It was like after the match, and I was the heel, and he came to save the guys we were beating up, and I just ended up being right there, so it wouldn't have made sense for him not to hit me. But at the same time, I feel like he got a little carried away with
it. Yeah, he's got that reputation for sure.
Between that, and that wasn't even that bad. Like, I recovered really quick. I bounced back. I felt fine the next day. Even though everybody was certain I had a concussion, I was cleared by paramedics. It was that, and then 4 months later, totaling my car, which was totally negligent on my behalf. I don't know anybody, that was nobody else's fault. And it was just me. So all's well that ends well. I came out okay, but that was clear. That was definitely a concussion because I felt like hell the next day. So between those two things, and then obviously, like I was saying, all the personal, kind of bad struggle, the personal struggle between taking it to the next level and sacrificing the things that I had, those all kind of came to a halt and made me decide to walk away. So I had my own pro wrestling moment with that chair shot that was kind of like, oh, you know what? maybe you're better off not doing this thing anymore.
That's a good story. They're gonna cut me off here shortly from where I do the podcast from an anchor here. They only give me so much time, but it'll just shut me off. But go ahead and give everybody all your links and everything where everybody can find everything.
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty sure we are on all platforms. So the only one that isn't / however after, or you can't just Google # however after, or just type in however after into your keyboard and have us pop up, would be Facebook. That one is Hell Ever After Opera. But every other platform, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, we're on TikTok. We haven't made any, and I don't know how that works.
but we're
on it. So if you want to go that route, we're on pretty much all the platforms as Hell Ever After. So you just type in whatever the medium is / Hell Ever After, and we should pop up. Or like I said, type it into the search keyboard, and boom, you'll have it.
And then you got the two songs on Spotify, and they're on, I think they're on iTunes.
I haven't looked at iTunes. We should be on iTunes.
I think they are.
I haven't followed through yet, but we are definitely on Spotify. Go like it. First and foremost, we're trying to really tweak those algorithms. I really don't feel like the algorithms are really working out for us. Go like us. It'll throw us into your playlist. I'd really enjoy that. Go comment on a picture. Instagram's kind of like our go-to. Bandcamp. That's where you can actually go and purchase. It's very inexpensive. $3 will get you all four songs of our demo. Or if you don't want to go that route, you get a certain amount of free streams. That's cool too, as long as people are listening. And then stay tuned because we're just getting started.
Yeah, once you get it all going, we're definitely going to have to talk again. What about YouTube stuff?
We have, like, I threw, like, one little piece that I just kind of played live. It's not even edited or professional quality audio. But we do have a YouTube, so you can go like and subscribe. We do plan to utilize that more. We're going to make videos because we are, at the end of the day, going to be a visual product.
And what about... go ahead.
Not only does the music carry its own, but we're going to add in visuals. So that's coming. Yep. We are definitely going to be making videos and such.
And what about your wrestling matches? Any on YouTube, or was that too early in the game?
No, 100%. You can go check out some of my pro wrestling matches. It's Salvatore Morocco, like the country, Morocco. I very much enjoy doing that. And if I was going to give a recommendation, my favorite matches were against an opponent. We kind of had a feud going for a couple years by the name of Tim Horner Jr. So if you want to see some of my best material, it would be Salvatore Morocco versus Tim Horner Jr. If you want to go that route.
Yeah, I knew Tim Horner Sr. if it's the same guy, I'm thinking of.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was asking because I'd wrestled like Tommy Rich and Austin Idol and Tracy Smothers, people like that back in the day. And like when I was moved to Utah and started wrestling here, all these younger guys were like, prove it, man. Let's see the YouTube video. I was like, dude, there wasn't even cell phones then. Like, nobody, people weren't just carrying
VHS.
Yeah, people weren't carrying around gigantic Super 8 recorders and recording all the job matches in Podunk, Kentucky and shit. So I said, I don't really need to prove it. I lost anyway. If I was going to lie about it, I'd say I won.
this has been immensely cool, and I would love to keep coming on and keep updating you.
Yeah, man. Every time you put out something new, you should just hit me up and we'll talk again.
Absolutely. Let's do that.
And this will, like I said, this will probably air tomorrow or possibly tonight on Spotify, and I'll shoot you that link. And after we hang up here, give me about 30 minutes or so, and I got a couple of things to do. But then I'm going to shoot you over the info for Black Doomba Records, my buddy Tommy Stewart that runs that, and then my buddy Brian Barentine that has a theater in Manhattan. And I'll also shoot you over Tom Matthews' info, too.
That's so cool.
All right, man. Well,
much appreciated.
So I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a really great talk, and one of my favorites, and I really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you very soon.
Sounds great. All right, you take care, all right?
All right, we'll see you.
All right, later.
Bye.
In case you are unaware, my name is Salvatore Morocco, and I am the main event. I am the Maximum Force Wrestling Heavyweight Champion. Now, on May the 6th, in Gowanus, New York, Jordan Lennox wants to take my new championship from me. Now, Jordan, you may be very good, but I am simply better. Now bring everything you have, and I will stand up to every challenge you have and come out on top. Now the belt's right here. The line is drawn. Every time I step into that ring, I plan to prove why I am one of the best to ever step into a squared circle. Now come at me with what you will, and I will prove exactly why they call me the main event.
Welcome to the world of Black Doomba Records. Featuring the doom sounds of Dave O'Horn, Grave Lover, Evermore, Black Doomba Records. On Facebook, Twitter, Bandcamp, and Big Cartel, and BlackDoombaRecords.co. Expect the dark.
Gathered here today to end this show. I didn't know I was going to play any harmonica for you today, and probably shouldn't have because it's not that good at it. I'm no Tony Holiday over here. Shout out to Tony Holiday down in Memphis. Anyway, hope you enjoyed my show today with my interview with Lawrence Gomez, formerly known as Salvatore Morocco. Yeah, so check out Hell Ever After. You know how to spell hell, you know how to spell ever, you know how to spell after. Find him on all the social media, everything. He tells you where to find him at, but you can... But first, I mean, you can just Google it. There ain't any other bands called that I found. It's a cool name, though. You gotta admit, Hell Ever After is a very cool name. One of those things you think of and say, man, I wish I'd have thought of that. You're going to hear big things from those guys, I believe. And that's my belief. Anyway, thanks again for Lawrence Gomez coming on the show. You notice how it's all a big connection again. He was a wrestler and a musician. And his first name's Lawrence. My last name's Lawrence. There's always some kind of tie-in. There's no Southern man or Western town tie-in this week, but I don't think I ever had anybody calling from Buffalo, but I've got I've had some friends from up there. One of my best friend's parents is from up there. My stepfather's from up in that area. My friend Andy Westy, back in Georgia, is actually from up in Auburn, up in that area. So I know some people from the area, familiar with the area a little bit. Gets damn cold up there. Gets cold here in Utah too, but I think it's a little bit colder up there, Niagara Falls area and all that. Anyway, what else is going on in the world? A lot of gun violence lately. A lot of shootings. I don't know what to, you know, what we should do about that. I know it's a big issue. Some people, you know, the Second Amendment right. Don't take my guns. You're gonna pry my gun out of my cold dead hand, kind of people. And then there's people that just get rid of guns altogether. We don't need them. Which obviously is not going to work because you can't put the old toothpaste back in a tube. Can't unmow the grass. You know, nobody's going to turn in all their guns. I mean, it actually probably would cut down on shootings if we did that. But I don't have the answers, folks. Just a simple guitar player living in northern Utah from Smyrna, Georgia. What do I know? But honestly, I have guns. I have probably 12, 13 guns. I don't think I've only purchased one gun in my life, I think. And that was for my wife. Most of the guns I have, my father was owned pawn shops most of my, well, from when I was about 20 years old on up. And I got guns from there. And I used to kind of just collect them and hang them on the wall and never really shot them. And most of my guns I haven't shot. But I don't have any AR-15s or, you know, I do have one, like, carbine. I think it's a 30 carbine rifle. I guess you might consider it a assault rifle. I don't know what you'd consider. It does hold 30. And to be honest with you, I do keep it by my bed. And to be honest with you, if somebody comes in and tries to break in my house and threaten my family, they're going to have as many holes as I could pump into them. But I'm not one of those gun nuts that walks around in Walmart with an AR-15 on my back or go to Starbucks and have a 9mm on my side. Even though, you know, Utah's kind of nuts. It's an open carry state. So you can just walk around with a gun if you want. And actually, I have done it. When I feel like craziness going on, I'll do it. But, you know, if the law came down and, you know, he said everybody had to turn in their guns, I'd probably do it. I don't know, I might stash one somewhere. You didn't hear me say that, though. But I'm not one of those people that's gonna sit there while the government comes and, you know, take it out of my cold dead hands. They'll take it out of my alive warm hands if they come get it. Last time I checked, the government had tanks and B-52 bombers and bazookas and things. So I don't think I'm gonna match them with my 38. And so yeah, I ain't one of those stupid people. And also, you know, I can tell you this. Not only, like I said, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, but I did back in the day, back in the 70s, I mean, I was a kid, I was born in 68. But I know back in the 70s, growing up near Atlanta, I grew up like, you know, 25 miles from Atlanta. So I was always there. My dad's businesses were in Atlanta, like right in the worst part of town. Back then, he didn't own a pawn shop. He owned a janitorial service. So we were in, that's kind of how I got into wrestling. We were always, he had contracts where they cleaned these giant buildings and offices and the wrestling promotion office and all that. But anyway, we'd go downtown Atlanta. But I can tell you right now, the gangs and the people back then didn't have guns because, well, you couldn't get a gun. You could get like a hunting rifle. Nobody really thought anything about it. You drive around. I mean, people pulled up into my school in high school and had hunting rifles and they're hanging in their truck. And nobody really thought anything about it. But I can tell you that the gangs and stuff back then had chains and knives. They couldn't get guns. You couldn't just go into a Walmart and buy a gun. Every now and then, like if you were a criminal, you could find like an old rusty .38 from somebody in a bar or something and buy it kind of under the table, and they would do that. But I mean, now that you can just go in anywhere and buy an assault rifle, it's definitely made it worse, in my opinion. But enough about guns. Shout out to Myra Hall. She was on the show a couple of weeks ago, episode, so far the second most listened to episode that I've had. Taylor Richards of Royal Bliss still holds the record with like 8,500 people. But Myra recommended me to a band called Salt Rock City. And they called me, and I'm going to do a gig with those guys. I'm not going to join their band. They have a guitar player who's, I'm sure, very, very good to be in their band. He has to be. But I appreciate her recommending me. I'm going to fill in for him. I believe it's June 30th. It's at a wedding up in the mountains, not too far from my house. So I guess you can't come unless, of course, you know the people getting married, which I don't, so I don't know who they are, so I can't tell you. But if you happen to be there, the point is I'm starting to get some calls. Been talking to the guys from the Elders, that band. They need a guitarist, and been talking to them about possibly joining them. They asked me to, and I may do it. They're a cool band. They like dress like, they're called the Elders. They're actually younger guys than me, but the Elders are in Utah. Everybody knows they're like the missionary guys, the guys that walk around with the white shirts and the little name tags, and they're called Elders here. But even though they're like 19, the missionary guys are usually 19 or so. But the band's called the Elders, so they wear the white shirts with the name tags. So good band. I think I opened for them once, or they opened for me. I think I opened for them actually, and during Sundance Film Festival once. But possibly gonna join those guys. I think I will, if it works out. If we get together and it seems to gel, and we'll see how that goes. So starting to get some stuff. Still got a gig on May 29th at the Yes Hell here in Ogden, Utah, over on Grant Street, I believe it is. Sam Smith runs that place. He's a cool guy. And still got some, I think I got August 24th in Park City with my own band, and then September 1st solo in Park City. So things are starting to happen. I'm going to be playing bass with Gary Drano and the Manic Emotions here. We're probably going to practice this coming Sunday and see how that goes. Other new things on the personal front, just bought an RV. I just picked it up yesterday. It was kind of a pain in the ass. It was kind of stressful. I had to get a tow package put on my truck and try to find enough room in my driveway to put the thing. It's like 22 feet long, 7 foot wide, 10, 11 foot high kind of thing. But got it all worked out. Fortunate enough to be able to afford to get one. So me and my family's going to do a little camping. The challenge with that right now is all the campsites are booked, but we got a couple booked, so we're going to try our hands in camping, see if we can put some smile on some faces in the old family circle here. And that started a new job. I don't know if we talked about this last time, but I've been on the job. When I went to training in Texas, came back. I'm still in training now, but I'm in back in Utah doing the training over in Clearfield. So driving a tanker truck, doing some, it's kind of complicated, man. You got all these hoses and pumps and can't mix this with that. And you got to wash this hose out before you hook this hose up to that. And all kinds of things, like it's a 5-compartment tanker truck, about 45 feet long or something. Drove up to Idaho Falls and did some stuff. So got another week of training. They're going to put me out on my own. We'll see how that goes. So far, so good. The money's good. So I'm going to try to stick it out. Do what you got to do. Sometimes you got to crawl out of your old comfort zone and make shit happen. It would have been much easier to stay at my older job and just do what I was doing. I knew it. I had the process down, or as they say in Canada, sorry for my Canadian listeners, process. Which my wife hates when I say that, but I usually say process now. It makes more sense. Anyway, starting to ramble. Anyway, check out Hell Ever After on all the mediums that they have, social media sites and Spotify. If you want to check out my music, of course, you can go to J.S. Lawrence or Jeff Lawrence. I'm on Spotify. I'm on iTunes. You can go to YouTube for Jeff Lawrence Lessons. My website is thejslawrence.com. You can find me on Twitter at JeffSLawrence1. You can find me on... what am I trying to say? Go over to Facebook and go to the Southern Man Western Town podcast. That's the page for the podcast. And you can also find me on there at Jeff S. Lawrence. You might have to search around. It's better to probably find the podcast first and find me on there. And you can also go to Instagram, JLaw Music Man, where I just post pictures and stuff mainly. Still doing my Facebook Lives. I'm about to do one when I wrap up this outro to the podcast here on Sundays usually. Then I'm going to go outside and cut some trees. You can also find me on my OnlyFans at Spanky McGee. I'm just kidding. Just kidding, folks. I have no OnlyFans, so don't go look at that. I don't know who Spanky McGee is, but it ain't me. If you find some big naked dude there toying with himself, it's not the J-Law that you know. But anyway, I appreciate all you guys listening. Thank you to Lawrence Gomez for calling in from Buffalo, New York. And got some people coming. I got some good interviews coming up for you, hopefully. I don't have anything in the can right now, so I'm just kind of playing it week by week. Used to keep 2 or 3 of these interviews in the can, but now week by week. So I'm going to play a little slide guitar for you. I know we're gonna call it a day. And thanks for all you listening. Please, wherever you're listening to this podcast at, whether it's Spotify or Apple or where I record the podcast at on Anchor, please like, subscribe, and follow, whatever the case may be. Please donate to the podcast, anchor.fm/Jeff-Lawrence. Leave me a voicemail on there. I'll play it on the show. Whatever you got to do. And if you can help me out, help me out. Go to venmo.com/Jeff-Lawrence-48 for a one-time donation. Or if you don't make it more than once, do it once a week. $1, $5, anything. All right. Signing off. Peace.
In case I don't see you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.